Our next case of the morning is number 054259, the United States against Charles Harris. Ms. Frost.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kristen Frost, and I represent Defendant Appellant Charles Harris, along with my co-counsel, William P. Murphy, who is seated at counsel table, and Mike Bianucci. Your Honors, this is a case concerning a sentence of 168 months that my client received after he pled guilty to one count of wire fraud in the U.S. District Court. The two main issues that have been raised in this appeal are that the District Court miscalculated Charlie Harris's guideline range when it improperly enhanced his sentence under a four-point financial institution enhancement, and second, the District Court did not determine a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary because it failed to consider all mitigation and evidence under the federal sentencing statute. This morning, I will stand on the arguments presented in the briefs as to all other issues and only address the first issue under Roman numeral 1 of my opening brief, which is namely the issue involving the District Court's misapplication of the financial institution enhancement. Your Honors, the plain language of the application note does not authorize a district court to impose the financial institution enhancement on hedge funds for three reasons. First, hedge funds are not listed under the application note definition of financial institution. Second, hedge funds are legally distinct and in no sense similar to investment companies. Third, hedge funds are not similar entities to those other entities that are listed within the application note definition. At sentencing, the district court improperly relied upon United States versus Collins, a Seventh Circuit case, to justify its application of the enhancement. The district court improperly read and applied Collins. This court has said that a district court cannot rewrite the sentencing guidelines to justify its own application of what the guidelines are supposed to mean. The Collins case is inapplicable to the case at bar. It never addressed the issue of hedge funds. It never addressed the issue of whether hedge funds are a financial institution for purposes of this enhancement. What was at issue in Collins was the power of the Sentencing Commission and whether the Sentencing Commission overstepped its congressional mandate in creating its expansive definition of financial institution. United States versus Collins was the last case in a series of litigation that occurred in this circuit throughout the late 1990s and the early 2000s, which developed this issue of what the Sentencing Commission was doing when it created the definition for financial institution. From the case of United States versus Randy, to the case of United States versus Lauer, up through United States versus Tomasino, and to United States versus Collins, this circuit has stated that the Sentencing Commission was using its legislative power to create a definition for financial institution, and that it did not conflict with its congressional mandate. That being said, hedge funds are not included within that definition, and the district court erroneously relied upon Collins to apply the enhancement.
Why wouldn't a hedge fund be fairly similar to some of the others that are specifically mentioned?
Actually, Your Honor, hedge funds are quite distinct from investment companies.
There are no similarities.
No, hedge funds. You bring up an interesting point because there is no one standard definition for hedge fund amongst industry participants in the courts or in the business world. The one agreement that most of these people who try to define hedge funds have come to is that they are not investment companies, they don't operate as investment companies, and they don't operate as any other kind of registered mutual fund.
But does fraudulent activity by hedge fund operators create the same societal damage as fraud to these would in the case of these misbehavior would in the case of these other financial institutions? Aren't the same sort of people hurt in the same sort of way?
According to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the government itself, no. The SEC has traditionally regulated investment companies, which are not limited partnerships, to protect the average investor, the person that decides to put their money into a mutual fund. Or another example would be someone that puts their money into a savings and loan or a certificate of deposit. These are your average investors. Hedge funds deal with sophisticated investors, and the SEC has recognized that because the SEC has not attempted to force hedge funds to have to register.
A lot of people lose money investing in hedge funds.
They do, Your Honor.
Sophisticated people are not all that sophisticated.
According to the SEC, they've given deference to what they consider to be sophisticated investors. The Securities Exchange Commission, hedge funds have been around for a long time. The first hedge fund, arguably, was created in 1949. Hedge funds have been around ever since then. They've gained in popularity as high-risk investment pools amongst a certain demographic of society, which namely usually are wealthier investors. Throughout this popularity of hedge funds, at no time has the SEC chosen to force them to register or to regulate their investment behavior. And all of these, the legal distinction between hedge funds and other investment companies lies in the security laws itself. The SEC...
But when you cut through all that, doesn't Judge Ripple essentially... hitting the nail on the head when he says it's the same object. It's to protect. You want a broad definition of what a financial institution is because the same sort of loss is to be discouraged or protected against.
But that's exactly why, Your Honor, the SEC hasn't chosen to regulate hedge funds, because it's a different type of investment vehicle, a different assumption of risk when you put your money in a hedge fund versus an investment company or any other entity that's actually insured by the federal government. Loss of money is loss of money. But these two vehicles are completely distinct under the law, and that was recently pointed out in the Goldstein versus Security Exchange Act case, which was litigated. This type of train of thought, this distinction, was litigated in the District of the D.C. Circuit recently this summer. And the D.C. Circuit, in that case, vacated and sent back a rule to the Securities and Exchange Commission. It was a rule that was possibly going to make hedge fund advisors register with the SEC. And in that case, the judge who wrote the opinion went at length to describe the differences not only in how hedge funds and investment companies invest, but also who invests in them and their status under securities law. Hedge funds are not defined as investment companies under any securities laws, as a matter of fact. Hedge funds are limited partnerships. They are not corporations. They do not have board of directors. They do not have internal auditors. Investment companies are forced to have a corporate structure according to securities laws. Hedge funds have been left alone for decades. I see that I am cutting into my rebuttal time, and at this moment, I will turn it over to the government.
We'll hear now from Mr. Murray.
May it please the court, my name is Tyler Murray, and I represent the United States, the appellee in this case. I will limit my remarks this morning to a discussion of whether the district court judge properly applied what I will refer to in shorthand as the financial institution enhancement. Now, the record before the district court judge at sentencing was that Tradewinds was an investment vehicle, a collection of hedge funds that traded substantially in stocks, bonds, currencies, commodities. From there, the court noted that the definition of financial institution in the application note included investment companies, mutual funds, and a catch-all that included any similar entity, whether or not insured by the federal government. From there, the court concluded that Tradewinds was a financial institution. That ruling was proper. Now, the appellant suggests that the court, in referencing Collins, misapplied the case. Not so. The discussion in that case was not limited to simply whether the SEC overstepped its legislative powers. It also discussed whether or not an entity set up as merely a conduit for fraud could also be a financial institution. And more specifically, in doing so, it established a, or at least referenced, a definition of investment company, and that is a company substantially engaged in the investment of securities of other companies. Now, the undisputed record before the district court at sentencing was that Tradewinds did invest in securities, bonds, stocks. So the analysis could stop there. It was an investment company. Now, the appellant finds some magic meaning in the word company, in the term investment company. That is not there. They will certainly concede that it was an investment vehicle. The fact that it is labeled in the guideline as an investment company has no magic to it. Company doesn't necessarily correspond exclusively to corporation. And I will point actually to the case that was just discussed, SEC v. Goldstein. There, in discussing registration requirements for different entities, including hedge funds, the court noted, and I'm at page 880, the site being 451 F3rd 873, the SEC promulgated a rule with respect to investment companies set up as limited partnerships rather than as corporations. So in its discussion here, which was who's going to be the client for purposes of a hedge fund, the client being limited partnership, not the individual partners. And I just bring this up as an example of the SEC stating that we're contemplating not just corporations, but limited partnerships in what constitutes an investment company. Briefly, I would also like to address just one point with respect to the district court's discussion of the 3553A factors. I'm not going to regurgitate what was stated in the government's brief, but I would simply like to point out that the things that Mr. Harris suggests were missing from the district court's analysis, that being a discussion of his cooperation and his family circumstances, that simply is not borne out by the record. In evaluating the history and characteristics of the defendant, and I'm quoting here, the court indicated that there's definitely some mitigating factors here that are significant. The court pointed to Harris's efforts at identifying for the government assets subject to forfeiture, as well as evidence that Mr. Harris was a devoted husband and a devoted father. In short, the sentence imposed here, 168 months, which was in the middle of the 151 to 188-month range, was reasonable and more than adequately supported by a thorough discussion of the Section 3553A factors. So if there are no questions, I would ask that the court affirm the sentence imposed in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Murray.
Thank you.
Ms. Frost, you have a minute left.
Just briefly, Your Honor, the government used the term magic meaning to try and de-emphasize the significance of the different classifications of entities that the Sentencing Commission chose itself to include within its definition. Investment company versus limited partnerships, these terms are important and significant because the Sentencing Commission took the time to list an enumerated list of entities. The fact that hedge funds are not listed and that hedge funds are not investment companies and that hedge funds are not similar entities under the catch-all phrase renders the district court's reliance upon this language and his reliance upon United States versus Collins as erroneous. Second of all, very briefly, very briefly, the government addressed 3553A in our argument as far as the reasonableness of Mr. Harris's sentence. We rested on the brief in that, but I just will use this opportunity to say that it was not a reasonable sentence. The district court did not consider all the evidence put forth, and that in doing so, the district court miscalculated my client's guideline range and imposed an unreasonable sentence that was miscalculated. For those reasons, we ask that this honorable court vacate Charlie Harris's sentence and remand this case back to the district court for resentencing without the application of the financial institution enhancement. And if the court has no further questions for me, I will conclude here.
Thank you, Ms. Frost.
Thank you.
Indeed, our thanks to both Ms. Frost and Mr. Murray, and the case will be taken under advisement.